Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
It's time for Movies and Booze. Serena Bellissimo, Jean Smollett and Brian Lloyd are with us once again. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Good
afternoon.
Two white wines, Jean.
Two white wines. Look, it's Indian summer. Come on. It's gorgeous out there. So let's just make the most of it and say, okay, we're not getting the big heavy reds and starting to cook the stews yet. So I thought we'd have two classics. Chablis, one of France's most famous white wine regions, and from a region called Pfalz in Germany, which is just on the border with France, we have an absolutely stunning dry Riesling.
Or a dry one, not because you know the way you think of German white wines, you think they're sweet.
I know, and predominantly now, and actually, it's very much on trend because millennials and Generation Z are all looking for lower alcohol, and most German wines, particularly the ones made from the Riesling grape, they have a much lower ABV. So it's a wine style that's now growing in demand and in popularity. So I just thought we'd feature, and this one is a particularly good one.
All that tells me is that I'll never go drinking with millennials or Gen Z. To be honest with you, they're no fun. One bottle after another, how quickly would it, or how much would it resemble real life, do you think?
Do you know, it's actually funny. Thomas Pynchon wrote it in 1993 and he based it on like 60s revolutionaries moving forward to now. But everything that he talks about, I mean, that was always the thing about Thomas Pynchon, was that he was like freakishly ahead of his time, that he was able to kind of see the sort of in the ether what was coming down the pipe for America, and now here it is. Yeah, it's one of those things where it's the sort of hilarity and stupidity of fascism and how kind of dumb it all is, but it's all like right in your face. I love this. This was brilliant. This is one of the biggest films of the year.
Like I say, I always thought Thomas Pynchon books were kind of notoriously unfilmable.
Jesus. I mean, I tried reading one of them and my brain turned to worms after 30 minutes. Like, you can't get through them. Like, I couldn't anyway. But no, I mean, I think Paul Thomas Anderson, he's kind of cracked it. I mean, he did it with Inherent Vice for sure. I mean, the whole thing of it, I mean, with Inherent Vice and with this as well, is the fact that the main character is a stoner. So their memory is going to be patchy, but there's a kind of a sort of a through line that you can kind of latch onto. And that's just real. That's just honest to God filmmaking and storytelling, that once there's enough of a through line that you can kind of hang your hat on, you can kind of, you know, riff around the edges and make it a bit kind of goofy and silly.
And The Dead of Winter, is that a more kind of traditional
Traditional. Yeah. Total potboiler thriller with Emma Thompson and Judy Greer. 90 minutes, already you're kind of pushing an open door on that one, and Serena can see you nodding along there as well. Give me a 90-minute film, you're already looking at 3 stars in my book, because if you can tell your story walking, fantastic, I'm already on board with it. And this is great. And Emma Thompson kicking the snot out of people, almost kind of doing a Liam Neeson-esque kind of vibe. Yeah, you wouldn't think it, because obviously she's Emma Thompson and she's this great thespian.
I thought she'd use sarcasm. That would be far more effective weapon from her.
For sure. I
feel bad now.
She's the same age as me and I'm not young. No. I couldn't push my way out of a paper bag.
Well,
Wait,
can someone get a paper bag and we'll test that?
Pump, right through. It's all in the follow through. But no, she's great in this. Yeah, really enjoyable. Yeah.
Okay. Very good. Isn't it funny though? Because you know the United Nations has been going on. The movie we're going to be talking about has deep resonance. One battle after another, deep resonances with what's going on now. And it's weird that this is Movies and Booze, and this is supposed to be kind of a little respite from what's going on in the world. Yet so much politics is encroaching on that world. Particularly this the Savant Jessica Chastain show. Is it gone, Serena?
Apple are saying they're just resting it, they're postponing it, because it was actually supposed to be out today. There was great excitement about this TV series. Basically, Jessica Chastain is an undercover investigator who's known as a savant, and she infiltrates online hate groups to stop domestic extremists before they act. Now, given with what has happened with Charlie Kirk and all the ongoing violence that's happening in the States at the moment, Apple have taken the decision to pull the series. They're saying it could be triggering for given what's going on at the moment. Interestingly enough, you know, usually stars go, okay, we fall into line, we are going to back what Apple are saying. Nah, Jessica Chastain has come out, and in fairness to her, she has said, I value my relationship with Apple. They've been incredible, but I do not align with what they've put out. Yeah. If it was up to her, she says that a show like this is needed more than ever.
Yeah.
But, of course, she's going to say that as well because she's been working on this for a long time. And given that they pulled it 3 days before it was meant to air.
Yeah.
So it's a tough one. You don't know what – we were talking about this outside and we don't know what the right thing to do is. Do you pull stuff like this when it is so close to what's happening in the political climate now?
Well, the thing is, as she points out in her statement, like – and there's a long tradition of political assassinations in the United States.
Yeah. Charlie Kirk, it's not like it's nothing new.
And like, as she pointed out, 300 school shootings.
Yeah.
Nah, that's not a problem.
No.
Like, you know.
It is. It's frightening.
Yeah. But it's also crass and insensitive. We should all of a sudden think twice. Oh, suddenly we're worried because it's Charlie Kirk.
Like, you had Weapons a few weeks ago, if you remember, which was a kind of a horror film, but it was a metaphor for school shootings.
Yeah.
And how many school shootings have there been between now and then? I'd say a couple, you know. And no one thought, oh, no, we should take Weapons, you know, we should pull Weapons out of cinemas and all the rest of it. But because... you know, it's Charlie Kirk because, you know, the far right are in power in America. Because
what's happened with Jimmy Kimmel?
Yeah,
as well.
With Jimmy Kimmel, they are setting the tone. Mm. But, I mean, one battle after another is very, very, very on the nose.
Mm.
It is literally about Sean Penn's character. I don't know, we're kind of getting ahead of ourselves. But Sean Penn's character, what kind of kicks the whole thing off is his character joins a white supremacist group that is deep in the heart of American government. And he's trying to clean up his past because he had a relationship with a black woman. So, like... you know, they didn't think twice about pulling that from cinemas. So,
no.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Everyone's mileage is different, I think.
Oh, yeah. And Jessica's actually said, I've never shied away from difficult subjects. And while I wish this show wasn't so relevant, unfortunately it is. The Savant is about the heroes who work every day to stop violence before it happens, and honouring their courage feels more urgent than ever. And that's an interesting way to look at this as well. Like, we're looking at the extremists and what they're doing, but she's saying we're actually looking at the heroes and what they're doing to stop this from happening.
Yeah. Yeah, it's curious that there's Apple, and you'd wonder what is the political context of that, that Apple might be a bit more, you know, given who owns those particular companies. Actually, just on that subject, Sky is reporting Trump just gave an impromptu press conference there. He says, think we may have a deal on Gaza, which we can all take to mean he absolutely doesn't have a deal on Gaza. Right, to move on, something perhaps a bit more pleasant. Rebel Wilson has got a movie about a girl band.
And look, you know, she's found a niche and she's sticking to it. And you know what? Now I think more than ever, we need some fun and laughter. And she's putting together a movie called Girl Group. And the reason why I'm so excited, and I already know I'm going, it doesn't matter what this is about, but some of the characters...
well, it's about a girl group.
It is. But some of the characters in it include Mel C from the Spice Girls.
Okay.
Ashley Roberts from the Pussycat Dolls and Shaznay Lewis from All Saints. So they are going to probably...
It's like a supergroup kind of thing, isn't it?
Well, that's what I thought. And then I read into it a bit more. Not much detail is known about this. All we know is that a search was conducted nationwide throughout the US to find some new leads. So I think they're putting together a group. I'm reading between the lines and thinking... these pop stars might come in and do the judging or give some mentoring or something.
Mentoring,
I don't know what it's about, but I already know that I will be that first person at the cinema going, I'm watching, I'm singing, I'm dancing. And given what's happened with K-pop, Demon Hunters, I think...
Have you watched it, by the way?
I did. My kids sat me down last week.
Wow.
Do you know what?
You must really love your children.
I didn't find it too bad. I did love the music. It's really cheesy and stuff. The music is what kept me going. My 10-year-old son has probably watched about 5 or 6 times at this stage.
Wow. So he's big into K-pop, like?
He wasn't.
No, but that's a weird thing. Kids are watching this and it's kind of almost separate from knowing K-pop particularly at all. It's more the TV show and those songs are really ill on their way in.
Because... my son was saying their teacher was putting together a playlist for the class and everyone was coming in with songs from Demon Hunters.
Right.
The occasional Oasis and stuff too.
Yeah.
But, you know, this has had a major...
It's so mad that K-pop is just like, for that whole generation, that's totally normal. They're all into it. Like,
it's just... fun.
Yeah.
Do you know what it is? It's not just the music. It's everything. It's the coordinated dance. It's so slick. And it's just so fun in this world where even though they may not know the news that we're watching, they can feel that that tension yeah. right? So this is no their tension is, are the boy band going to beat the girl band, or, you know, will the demon hunters appear, the demons appear?
Yeah, do they actually hunt any demons in that movie, or is it just mostly singing?
There's a lot of singing. Mm.
But the singing is what beats the demons. This is the thing.
I see. Do the demons sing?
The demons do sing too.
Oh, yeah. Really?
And,
interesting.
And Ken Jeong is in this too.
You know him from The Hangover.
Oh, right. Okay. Right, yeah.
The blank look on your face
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. Let's have a drink, James.
Absolutely. Okay. We're going to start with the German wine. And this is the 2024 Kimmich Riesling Trockendry. And you'll get this in Barnhill Stores in Dalkey, Higgins of Clonsky, McGuinness Wines Merchants in Dundalk, and Next Door in Conakilty, and other independent off licences. Now, this is from a town called Deidesheim, which is in the Pfalz region. It's about 2 hours from Frankfurt. And I know this well because since 2010, for 15 years, I've been judging a competition called Mundus Vini, which is a big international European wine tasting competition. And it takes place every year in Deidesheim. So I know this place so well and I love it. It's like Hansel and Gretel houses. It's like picture postcard. It's beautiful. It really, really is, you know. And this particular wine it's a family estate. It's obviously Kimmich is the name of the family. They've been making wine in the region for 250 years. And the story is Andreas Kimmich was a cooper who moved from Alsace in 1758, married a wealthy widow. Hold that thought, because the next wine we're having, there's a similar story, but it happened in France. And today, the eighth generation of his family, Franz and his son Matthias, produce the wines. Now, this, the name of the, my German is, it's Mauselhol, which could be Mousehole. I'm not sure. But anyway, it's a single vineyard.
Well, funny enough, this is nothing to do with what you're saying, but there is a town in Cornwall. It's pronounced Mousel, but it's spelt Mousehole.
So it's,
I don't know, but that's not German.
Because
I was there once. Well, that's why.
The grapes are grown in the vineyard, which is just outside the village of Deidesheim. So, I mean, Brian was saying to me, oh, he didn't even know Germans made wine. Germany had been making wine since Roman times. One of the biggest wine festivals in Bad Dürkheim, they have found Roman ruins going back to 20 AD that actually, you know, obviously the Romans brought the vines to Germany. So the thing is that because it's cool climate, and Riesling is the grape, and Riesling is one of the great white grapes of the world, but it really performs well in cool climates. So you have lower alcohol. Now, this particular wine is a 12.5% ABV, but most German wines are about 8%. So if you
really that low, wow.
And that's naturally, that's not tinkering around to make the alcohol lower. That's, you know, because it's very cold winters, and you know the Riesling vine is very sturdy, so it can withstand the freezing winters. So this Kimmich, I think, is absolutely stunning. I mean, what you get is you get lovely stone fruits, apricots, peaches on the nose. But then the minerality, this gorgeous crisp acidity, and that's one of the key things about Riesling grape, acidity. So if you like acidic grapes, this is one to go for. I think this is absolutely stunning quality. As I say, it's new to the market, and we're seeing a lot more German wines coming onto the market. Give it a try. It's absolutely fabulous. The Kimmich Riesling Trockendry. What does everybody think?
It's really good.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
She's a connoisseur of these things, is Serena. Brian, what movie would you like to talk about first?
Let's go with One Battle After Another.
Okay, One Battle After Another coming up after this.
Maybe I can give you some information and then you give me some information. All right, we'll just share a little information. My name is Bob Ferguson. I don't know if you've ever heard of me. All right, I was part of French 75 for years. Years and years, all right? They used to call me Ghetto Pat, Rocket Man, stuff like that. Only problem is I fried my brain since then, man. I have abused drugs and alcohol for the past 30 years, man. I'm a drug and alcohol lover, and I cannot remember for the life of me or the life of my only child the answer to your question.
That's One Battle After Another, a very starry cast, including Lenny Williams and Benny Dell. We'll explain that later on. Serena will explain it to us. Right, so it's So is it kind of like, it's kind of like these guys were revolutionaries 25 years ago and they're suddenly back for one last mission?
Back for one last mission, yeah, pretty much, yeah. So it's kind of set in an alternate, but not that alternate, America, where there's a vastly militarized police force on the prowl. Sean Penn plays this officer in it. 16 years before the events of the film, Leonardo DiCaprio and Tiana Taylor break into this immigration detention center, break everyone out, and Sean Penn is the sort of the commandant over that camp. He gets attacked in the whole chaos of it or whatever, and from there then it becomes Sean Penn has this obsession with Tiana Taylor, who's Leonardo DiCaprio's wife/partner in it. They fall in love. They have a child that's played by Chase Infinity. Sean Penn's character captures captures some of the group, the French 75 that you heard there. And from that, then he's able to track them down one by one. Like Alana Heim.
Just saying it over and over, you'll get to it.
I mean. We'll get there. She's in the group as well.
And what do they want, this group?
They're revolutionaries. They're kind of like the Weather Underground. You know, that sort of way.
Is it specific what they're
just in? general good stuff, like as in free borders, free love, everyone free, no more kind of government repression, yada, yada, yada. Like, it's a little bit undefined, but that's kind of the point. Because when you think back to these revolutionary groups, I mean, yeah, they had their big, huge manifestos and all the rest of them, and it was very, very much right on, but it was quite nebulous, you know, that sort of way. It was just about opposition, all about opposition. And that's really what this film, I think, is about, is this idea of opposites. You know, it's just opposites attracting, but also then opposites pushing off each other, and that it will always just collapse into one another. And even the title as well, One Battle After Another, I mean, that comes from a real life leaflet that the Weather Underground sent out. That's where the title comes from. So it has a lot of resonance with real world, but then at the same time, because it's Paul Thomas Anderson and because it's Thomas Pynchon, there is a lot of stupidity in it, and I mean that in the most complimentary way. For example, Sean Penn's character is called Stephen J. Lockjaw, and the way that he plays him, it is almost like a Benny Hill parody of these right-wing goons that you see on telly all the time. Like when he rocks up to one scene where he's been introduced to these white supremacists that he's going to join, like he has the stupid little button-down shirt that they all wear, and like there's about 27 veins coming out of his neck, and he's just walking like he's got a rod up his arse, and he just looks ridiculous. And I mean, this is the thing that I find so funny about the film, is that like they are making fun of Sean. He is the butt of every single joke in this film. Like there's even a scene later on where Chase Infinity's character is like, why is your shirt so tight? Well, what, like, that's way too small for you. And like, you can see it, like it's literally cut right off. And yet, in real life, Sean Penn wears those stupid shirts all the time. And he does look like he's jacked up on HGH. Like, so it's like, do they get that they're taking, like, is he in on the joke? Does he know that they're taking the piss out of him? I mean, what's going on? Like, you're very kind of aware of the fact that it's like, they are going, the joke, they're going right at it. They are aiming right for the eyes, like. And he's very funny in it. This is the thing. Like, it's a very, very funny film. Like, that clip that you heard there, where Leonardo DiCaprio's character, who's this just total stoner reject, is trying to kind of call the revolutionary hotline, which in itself is hilarious, and he can't remember the code, and then he starts roaring down the phone at them like it's a call center. It's like, look, I can't remember, all right, Jesus. And you know, in one scene he's doing that, it's in the middle of a riot happening outside the window, and you can see like fire, and again, it's like something from like The Naked Gun, you know, that kind of way. Like, it's so goofball funny. But then on top of that, I mean, it's so propulsive. I mean, the film is like just 20 minutes shy of 3 hours. And I didn't. No, I know you're all in your eyes, Serena. I swear.
Doesn't need to be.
Yeah, kind of. Kind of does. And like, I was watching it, I didn't feel a minute of it go by. I mean, I looked at my watch at the end. It was like, Jesus, this is like half one. What are we doing here? Like, so I loved it. I thought it was great. All the American critics are like going crazy for it. It's 5 stars the whole way through. David Ehrlich in IndieWire says it is the greatest American film of the last 15 years. I think that's a little bit high praise.
Okay.
What I think is happening with American critics is that they are finally seeing their real lives put up on screen. Yeah. Whereas, you know, European and UK and Irish critics, we have been observing it all this time. So we're watching this kind of like, well, yeah, duh. You've been like this for the last few years. Why are you not catching on to it, you know? But yeah, I loved it. It's brilliant. It's very funny. It's very smart. Great cast. Like I said, Sean Penn, Leonardo DiCaprio, Benicio Del Toro is in it. Regina Hall is in there as well. Chase Infinity is his daughter. She's going to be huge. You're going to be hearing from her in the next 10, 20 years. So yeah, definitely recommend.
Did this come out too late for Oscars?
No. Yeah. I'll put my money down now. Sean Penn, Best Supporting Actor. Lock it in now. If you're going to put money down, put it down on that.
Okay. Will Leo get a nod, do you think?
I'd say he got nominated. He won't win, though. But Sean Penn, Best Supporting Actor, I'm going to put money down.
He's going to give a long speech, though.
And it's going to be insufferable.
Yeah, it will be.
Is he chain-smoking throughout that whole thing? Because in AKA Charlie Sheen, he appears as a talking head.
Yeah.
And all you see
is just him
smoking away.
I think that's what
time.
He does. Yeah, he does smoke all the time.
And Louis Theroux, well, he was on with Louis Theroux as well. That podcast, he was just like literally just blasting.
Is that part of his character's?
No, he doesn't do it in this. Oh, wow. He doesn't do it in this, but it's no. God,
I wonder if they have to give his takes really short. I'm somebody's going to run out for a fag.
Jeez, like, I mean, I remember when I used to smoke, like, I mean, I was on 30 a day, like, and I couldn't go 10 minutes, like 10, 20 minutes without, like, gnawing on my nails, like, so I get it, like.
Gosh.
Wow.
Yeah.
Right. Well, speaking of that film, Leonardo and Benicio del Toro did a podcast where it was recommended they change their names back in the day.
So I don't know is it news that Leo actually did a podcast? Because I've never seen him do a podcast before, but everyone seems to be doing the Jason Travis Kelce podcast. New Heights, who are they? They're the NFL players. One's engaged to Taylor Swift, if you don't know.
It's actually here.
Who?
Travis Kelce is here, I think.
Does he play for one of those teams?
No.
No, but he's here for something. Apparently somebody's seen him.
Okay, well, hi, Trev, if you're watching.
If he's listening.
Sure. Okay, he's getting the Freedom of Dublin as well.
There you go.
Is he really?
No.
They'd give it to anyone.
Kind of would, in fairness.
It's kind of like presenting Liveline. Everyone's done it to this day.
We've all done a spin, Everyone's done a spin.
One thing he did give us was an exclusive with Leo and Benicio del Toro. They were talking about their names, and they've got very ethnic names, Leonardo DiCaprio, Benicio del Toro. When Leo was 12 or 13, an agent actually said to him, you should change your name. You're not going to go anywhere with Leonardo DiCaprio. His dad ripped up the photo and went, no, you're not going any. Because they had it printed out with his name on it and stuff. And the dad was like, over my dead body. The name that they went with, they didn't even stick with Leo. They went with Lenny William. Williams, because his middle name is William.
Yeah.
So
that's like a character from The Simpsons.
Yeah. Lenny Williams.
At least Benicio del Toro was a little bit closer. It was Benny Del. But I'm so glad that the two of them just went,
Benny Del sounds like a misprint. really, doesn't it? What terrible names.
Isn't it? Yeah. And I'm so glad they stuck to their guns, because it changed their ethnicity and everything. So I'm glad we've got Leonardo DiCaprio and Benicio del Toro rather than Lenny Williams and Benny Del.
Yeah. We have unconfirmed report that Jason Kelce has been spotted.
Jason.
Yeah. It's Jason. Oh,
yeah.
It's one of them.
Jason will be having a great time.
Well, it could be just some other big guy, you know, big American walking around.
I mean, there's a rake of them outside of here. Like, and what he was saying, there's like that shop is around
the
corner.
There's literally about 200 queuing for the Steelers pop up shop. Seriously. The wait is apparently 45 minutes because I heard people talking.
For what?
To buy merch.
Again, for what? Like, Jesus.
Because you're in Dublin, so you have to go home with Dublin merch.
No, it's all Steelers merch. It's
Steelers merch, but you
so they could get this all home. But
you think they would have brought it with them somehow?
That's what I thought. But you know, why pay Dublin prices when you could get them for half the price and bring it with you?
They've probably got some Dublin feature on them that you probably only get.
And it's probably the logo or something. Yeah.
I wouldn't keep 45 minutes around.
Wait until they go back and they're hit with all the tariffs. Right. Right, so Tom Holland hurt his head.
He did.
Aww.
He made boo-boo.
He made boo-boo. Do you know what?
Kiss it better.
It was big enough that the production got shut down, and it's still shut down at the moment. He basically, something happened that caused him to hit his head on the floor, and he got a mild concussion. But someone came out and told The Sun, an insider, the direct quote is, "The accident wasn't as bad as people think. A line snapped on a pull ring and he got a bump on his head. Filming was supposed to start again in London on Thursday, but for now the production team have been told to stand down for 2 weeks. He was seen out and about in London with Zendaya, though, so I'm sure he's fine." So
yeah. Like, we all pull it. Listen, we all pull a sick year.
Every now and again. Why not?
Why not?
Like, now, did Rick Moranis actually retire? Or
He did. Yeah, I wrote a big piece about this.
Why did he retire?
His wife died of cancer.
That's right.
And his wife was sick with cancer and then she died, and he essentially felt that he would rather be a father than be an actor. And as well, when John Candy died, two of them were really good mates, and apparently Moranis felt that Candy's death was... it was Hollywood that killed him, you know, that sort of way, because they wanted him to kind of lose weight and all the rest of him, then he wanted him to put on weight and all the rest of it, and he had a very kind of negative reaction to that. And then he just retired and he basically went off and was a dad to his kids. And, you know, he's done like comedy albums since then. I've listened to a few of them. They're funny enough. It's that whole sort of like Jewish Catskills comedy, you know, kind of thing. Right. No, but I mean, that's a real Borscht Belt comedy.
Sure,
like that's a real thing. But that's why he quit. Yeah,
I used to confuse him with Madden Short, and I still do. If I say the two,
oh no, they're totally different.
I know, but I there's something about
them
both that
quite short.
They both do the goofy thing.
Yeah,
but isn't Martin Short going out with Meryl Streep now?
Yeah.
And do you know the pub in Cross MacGlen, County Armagh? Shorts. There's a pub in Cross MacGlen in County Armagh called Shorts. That's his family. That's his family. He's like first generation Canadian Irish. Yeah.
Okay, so Rick Moranis is actually coming out of retirement.
He is coming back. Spaceballs. Oh, yeah. Do you remember Spaceballs a 1987 movie?
He plays Dark Helmet.
I love that you remember like the intricacies of the film. I just remember that I loved watching this film. It was goofy. It was nuts. It starred Mel Brooks, John Candy, Rick Moranis. They're talking about number two happening. Bill Pullman's coming back. Mel Brooks, I'm sorry, I didn't think he was still with us. He's 99.
Yeah.
He's coming back for this as the...
Crikey.
Daphne Zuniga, who was in Melrose Place, is coming back to play Princess Vespa, and George Weiner is coming back as Colonel Sanders. So the new cast... the new cast is going to include Josh Gad, Kiki Palmer, Lewis Pullman, and Anthony Carrigan. So they're saying that this is slated to land in cinemas in 2027, when I know we're all excited about Rick Moranis coming back, but Mel Brooks will be 101.
Wow.
And he's still with it. Yeah. He is still with it.
That's the way you want to be.
Yeah, that's the way you want to be. Yeah. That's the way to go. Lots of people texting in, by the way. Yeah, just going back to, because Brian, you'd said you didn't know the Germany made wine. Brian's not a drinker, really, so that's quite understandable.
I didn't, yeah.
But people are pointing out, of course, Blue Nun and Black Tower.
Okay, all right. I don't drink.
Yeah, no.
I don't drink.
Black Tower wasn't a wine. It was a candle holder. That's actually what it was. You are listening
and it
went
to everybody's dance.
Yeah. You are listening to The Moncrief Show and you start. We'll take a break back in a minute. Right, so let's drink to their good fortune.
Okay, well, we're going to Chablis, which is very popular. And there's this urban myth that I've been listening to in the wine trade for years. People say, oh, I had this customer and they said, oh, I hate Chardonnay, but I love Chablis. Complete rubbish. I don't think anybody's ever said that. But people love to, it's a bit of snobbery there. They love to claim it, right? The great white grape of Burgundy is Chardonnay. And Chablis is north of Paris in a place called the Yonne Valley, where the soil is all chalk, and that makes such a difference. It's usually not made, either aged or fermented in wood. So it's got a totally different flavour profile, and it's like Marmite. People either love it or they hate it, right? I love it personally, but I know people don't like it, and I totally get that. So what you have here, this is, again, Louis Moreau, and this is available in Celtic Whiskey Shop in Dawson Street, and they actually import it directly as well. And they had a wine event, the Wine Crew event on Monday, which I was actually working at. And I met the wife of the fellow who makes this wine, Anne Moreau. And again, the story is Louis Moreau is the sixth generation of his family, and his great-great-great-grandfather, whatever, was another Cooper who moved from the Côte d'Or to Chablis and married a woman with great frontage, as they say, or married a, and into the family.
That means you've got something completely different.
You know what I mean. So basically, what Anne told me is that they don't, this is like Chardonnay, they don't use any wood at all when they make this wine. What they do is they age it on its lees. They leave the dead yeast cells in contact to give the sort of more brioche, more rounded character to the wine. It's the 2023 vintage, Domaine Louis Moreau. And you get that lovely, almost, you know, melon tropical fruit. So those yeasty notes on the nose or brioche. And then when you try it, this is not an acidic grape variety. This has lovely round tropical melon fruit. And this is what I love about it. You get that lovely white fruit coming through. But there's enough acidity in it to make it interesting. And it's not like searing acidity, like taking the sides, making you salivate in the side of your tongue. It's just gentle acidity. So I think this, for me, this is a lovely wine. But I totally get that people don't. Are not Chardonnay fans, but I am, and I love a good Chablis, and I think this is a good one. So, Domaine Louis Moreau, and you'll get it in Celtic Whiskey Shop.
Okay, okay. Good news for you, Jean.
Yes.
Keanu Reeves is still on the market.
Wow.
Yeah.
He's still my beating heart.
Oh, really?
No, wouldn't do it for me in a million years. No.
Okay.
No.
Doesn't have enough frontage.
No, not enough frontage.
So during the, I think it was late last week, early this week, there were photos circulating. Not only was it announced that Keanu Reeves got married at 61 to his partner, Alexandra Grant, who was 52, and people were celebrating because it was like, look, they found love at an older age, and they went and they had this big party, and we all believed it. This is what's very scary. We all believed it because the photo that they put out looked amazing. They looked so happy. He was in his tux. She was in her white wedding dress. He put out a statement through his reps to say that, no, we actually didn't get married. But then I love what Alexandra did.
Was it a real picture?
No, it was AI.
Yeah.
And that's what's scary because I then went back to try and find this picture and just went, it looks so, they both look so happy. Alexandra Grant put up a photo of them kissing in front of an art exhibition. It was actually beautiful. And the caption was, this is a real photo, not an engagement photo or an AI wedding announcement, simply a kiss. And then she went on and said some other stuff, really lovely stuff.
But basically they're not getting married.
Yeah. And then she just said, good news is much needed these days, but it's still fake news. So be careful out there. So he's a bit of real happiness. And it was them kissing in front of an art exhibition. But that's what I found really scary because I fell for that. Because usually when these announcements happen, I will go online and I'll look at a couple of sources to make sure that, you know, but online publications were reporting
everyone got it.
Real.
Yeah.
And that photo was everywhere and everyone was genuinely happy for them.
Mm.
So it's actually quite scary.
Crikey.
It's one of those things though, you feel like they're kind of like testing the waters almost kind of to see if people will fall for it.
Yeah, and increasingly people do. And soon we won't be able to tell the difference.
Exactly.
Right, our next movie is The Dead of Winter. Here's a clip.
Anyone out there? It's an emergency. There's been a kidnapping. Anyone? Oh, hey there.
What are you doing up here?
Just a little fishing.
By yourself?
Yeah. See, you wouldn't happen to know where a Lake Hildar is, would you?
Yeah. Just back over the hill here.
Okay. Well, stay warm.
Right.
Ooh.
Right. Okay. So the setup is what exactly?
Emma Thompson is a Minnesotan fisherwoman, recently bereaved, returning to the lake where she used to fish with her husband. There's told through flashbacks where her real life daughter, Emma Thompson's real life daughter, Gaia Wise, plays the younger version of Emma Thompson in it. While she is there looking for this lake, she happens across that guy who you heard there, I think Mark Menchaca is his name. She basically stumbles across a kidnapping plot between Mark Menchaca and Judy Greer, who people would know from God, 13 going on 30, yeah. Arrested Development. No one more is a comedic actress. And yeah, they have kidnapped a young woman and are planning to operate on her and basically take some of her organs and sell them. So Emma Thompson has to basically go into Liam Neeson superhero mode and stop them from all happening. It's directed by Brian Kirk, who is a Northern Irish director previously known for doing like Game of Thrones. He also did this great New York noir film a couple of years ago called 21 Bridges with Chadwick Boseman. And it's really just... It's an example.
Does Emma Emma's character have like a skill set like Liam Neeson? She's just like she's a fishing woman.
She is just
going around bashing people with her rods.
Kind of, yeah. Like she's just like a plucky older woman.
Okay,
that you know is a little bit ingenious, is able to kind of like you know rig up a little kind of wire thing and all the rest of it. And like yeah, I mean it's not okay. Like the reality of it is when you come to these kind of thrillers. There is an element of suspension of disbelief, and there's there are plot holes big enough you could probably drive a car through them, right?
Yeah.
For example, how is it that no one has cell reception? How is it that the bad guys didn't bring enough bullets, and you know they've only got like one clip in it? And how is it that they every time they fire they don't hit anything? You know,
like, bad guys never do. It's well known fact.
Do you know what I mean? Like, and it's like not even a ricochet, and like you hear the guns pop, and no one hears that and comes over, and just you know, there's all these kind of contrivances in it. But, you know, what I loved about this was that, you know, for 90 minutes, it just goes. It is just, this is a pot boiler, and I mean that in the most complimentary way possible. This is a work of craft, not a work of art. Emma Thompson,
wrong with that at all, no.
That's a compliment. Yeah, yeah. I mean that, like, this is like really good actors, really good writers, really good director, all just making a good and entertaining, enjoyable story for 90 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, the efficiency, there is not a bit of fat on this. And yeah, I really, really enjoyed it. And I mean, it's exactly the kind of film that you do not see in cinemas anymore, but that you would see thrown up on your Netflix or your Prime Video that would just get churned out and you'd probably not even bother to watch it. But the fact that this is in cinemas, I think, is a sign of, okay, we can pull stuff, you know, we can still make these mid-range thrillers that are really, really enjoyable. I mean, Peter Bradshaw in The Guardian gave this 5 stars. Now, I wouldn't go that far.
Yeah.
But... it's definitely enjoyable.
Okay, and both those movies we talked about today are in cinemas today.
Right now.
Okay, good stuff. Thanks to Serena, Jean and Brian.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.